Good evening, one and all. Another week, and here we are, another show with me, Barry, on New Visions. New Visions, I can't even think. I'm telling you, I'm getting old. My brain is going. Anyway, another book and a chat on New Visions Radio with me, Barry. But yes, a book and a chat it is, because we are here for, as always, with a guest. Now, I've been saying for many years now that there has been an increase in the number of doctors that are writing books and the number of legal people that are writing books. Now, the doctors is because, obviously, now they can use the laptop and stuff like that. People don't have to try and read their writing anymore. And the legal people, well, let's face it, you know, lawyers and that, they're telling stories all the time, perhaps. But it has been on the increase, and it is today. Well, perhaps not quite today, but I better introduce my guest before I get into that, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Raina Marda Gentin. Hi, Raina. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show. I said not quite that, because you did come from a criminal attorney type background, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I practiced criminal appellate law for about 18 years.
But it was sort of after that you sort of got into the writing. It wasn't like, you know, some people, you know, oh, I've always had this yearning for writing and stuff like that. You did it as a bit of a joke, didn't you? A bit of a lark you got into it.
Well, I hope it wasn't a joke, although it might, you know, some people might say it was a joke.
Right.
It was unexpected. I was not one of these lawyers who was always pining away to be a novelist. And definitely there are some. I mean,
we have them a lot on the program, I'd say.
I'm sure. I was actually a very happy attorney, and the writing came afterwards.
Because that just worked good for you, wasn't it? The attorney stuff with the family and everything like that. And it suited you and, you know, quite an inspirational part of your journey, I'd have thought.
I think so. And definitely has, you know, figured very heavily in my writing. And I'm grateful for that. It's given me a tremendous amount of material. So
it come a long way from being head cheerleader.
Yeah, that's kind of a little in joke. My husband likes to say that he was the captain of the football team and I was the head cheerleader. And that's how we met in high school, but in fact, we were in the orchestra. It was much more.
Oh, and it sounded so good.
Yeah, no, that's actually just a lie. He played. He was a very good cellist, and I was a very poor violinist. And that, you know, but whatever. We made music together, so it was all
there
good.
There you go. So you ended up going into this writing class. Not really for anything, you know, just thought you'd do it. And you got hooked on it.
I did. I actually started out taking a memoir writing class. A friend of mine was taking a class at Sarah Lawrence College, which is very close to my house. And she asked me to go with her. And at first I just kind of laughed it off because I thought, you know, I'm not writing memoir. That's not, you know, you have to have a certain kind of life to write a memoir. But, you know, I found out pretty quick that that's not actually true. I mean, I think it is true if you want to write an actual memoir. This is my life from start to wherever you are. But writing memoir pieces is very different. You know, that's very much more learning how to isolate moments in your life and relationships in your life and, you know, make them relatable and interesting to other people. And it was invaluable. And I took the class for a year. And when I was done, I kind of had accumulated a bunch of pieces that were basically characters. And I decided to try to turn that into a novel. So that's where the novel came from. The
interesting, because I've had, I guess, one would say, an interesting life, for want of a better word. And, you know, I'm sort of with, you know, some friends down the bar or wherever, you know, and they're sort of talking about, obviously, about things happening in England. Have you met so-and-so? Have you met that? Yeah, I've met this person. I've met that person. And I sort of go through it and everything like that. I think, basically, that's like you were, you know, little short bits. You know, I got a story about this. I've got a story about that. I've got a story about meeting this person, you know. And it is really, at the end of the day, it is a memoir. You've left your mark on the world. You've sort of, you know, you've done some things that people say, really, you did that? Or you met that person and stuff like that? And yeah, but it's right. But it's really just a normal life. But then if you slice those bits out of it, you're building into your whole memoir, really, in the end of the day.
Definitely. I mean, definitely you could weave it into a memoir if that's the genre that you're interested in writing. But, you know, I didn't really want to do that. I wanted to take those bits and pieces and turn them into fictional characters because I didn't want to necessarily write about people that I knew. And
exactly.
People
yeah,
that,
that's,
you know,
the other, that's the other thing, so. Especially, I mean, you know, a lot of legal people, obviously, they write, they use things they've learned, shall I say, to enhance their story. But you don't want to bring people in. This person did this. You bring that in, but to start bringing characters in, that's when you're going to get into trouble, I'm sure.
Yeah. Sometimes I think it's better just to. And the problem is that even then, when you write the novel, everyone's asking you all the time, is this person real? Did this really happen?
Yeah.
Is that, you know, so you spend a lot of time.
One of mine, they said, oh, is there any of you in this book? Well, of course there is. I wrote it. You know what I mean?
How could
there not be? But, you know, you always, people say, you know, write about what you know and stuff like that, because then I have people write books about abuse or illness or stuff like that, you know. And I always think if the person writes that into a novel, their experiences into a novel, not like six ways to do this or don't do that. If they make it into a story, the person reading it puts themselves in that, you know, the character's position and can relate therefore to it. And I always think it's a lot better to do something like that than, you know, six ways to make your life better sort of thing. But that's my view.
Right.
You're still it doing. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, I was going to say it gives you a little distance too.
Yeah,
I
mean, exactly.
It allows you to kind of try to substitute in some things that are not exactly accurate because you want to move a little bit away from it. So.
But you're still doing a bit of justice stuff, aren't you? Volunteering?
Yeah, I was doing quite a bit of volunteering before COVID hit. And then, you know, the courts shut down. So it's slowly coming back now. I haven't decided. I've kind of filled up my time a little bit since then. So now I kind of not sure whether I'm going to go back to it or not. But so we'll see.
As we were just saying, I mean, you know, your first book, Unreasonable Doubts, did indeed have, you know, some public defender and stuff like that in it. So obviously with that. But then you did a mid-grade one. Where did that sort of My Name is Layla? Where did that sort of inspiration come from?
Yeah, so that ended up, I was taking a class also at Sarah Lawrence once again. And I can't stress the importance enough of kind of becoming part of a community and taking classes, because to me that's, you know, that's a lot of it. That's a lot of where the satisfaction comes from. But I took this class on writing for kids, and I had absolutely no idea what I was going to write about. And I'm one of those people that really responds well to deadlines. So as soon as you tell me, you know, you have certain number of pages due at a certain time, I'm going to do it. So I pretty much wrote a chapter, you know, each time that we had to meet. And the book is about a young girl with undiagnosed dyslexia. And I was mostly looking for some kind of issue that would cause a child to have tremendous frustration and maybe to act out in a way that was not part of their personality, but maybe have it be something that wasn't so obvious. Like sometimes you see these books and they're about kids that have something really obvious that they would get bullied about or whatever. And, you know, I didn't want it to be that. I wanted it to be something more internal, something that she could a little bit hide from other people. So it was great. I mean, I learned a lot about dyslexia. I've been, you know, dealing with a lot of associations that, you know, help kids with dyslexia. And it was a really good experience.
And it won an award as well.
It did. It won the Moonbeam Award in the preteen division. So, yeah, I was proud of that.
There you go. But now your new book, Both Are True. This is another back to the legal court stuff, is it?
It's back to the court stuff. It's back to New York City. It's not a criminal court. This time it's family court. And I did spend some time practicing in family court, both at the beginning of my career and then later as a volunteer. And to me, family court is like where the down and dirty is. You know, that's where the emotions are.
Yes,
and
yes.
As much as, you know, the stakes sometimes look higher in criminal court, I think really the stakes are highest in family court. That's where, you know, people are either imploding or working it out. And it's just, I think it's a fascinating place. So that the protagonist is a family court judge. And, you know, you see the kind of things she learns from the cases and how it affects her personal life and her relationship.
Yeah, I mean, because she was, what, 40-ish or something like that, is she?
Yeah, she's 40-ish. She's not married. She's very kind of uptight and controlling. And she's just been appointed to this judgeship. And she kind of goes into the courtroom thinking that she can fix all the dysfunction that comes in front of her just by, you know, kind of willing it away. And that's kind of how she's approached her personal life too. And it hasn't worked too well on either front. So
I was going to say, because to be in a family court, you know, sometimes, especially you haven't got any sort of background of being in that sort of position in your own experience, that's be very hard. Cause I mean, you have to see through a lot of smoke screens, emotional, I'd have thought, as well as sort of actual, to get to the bottom of some of this stuff. And it must be very hard to keep a distance sometimes with some of these cases.
I think it's hard to keep a distance. And as I thought, you know, you were alluding to at the beginning of that, is it's also hard to understand sometimes if you haven't yourself been part of it. And, I remember my first job, I was a law guardian. And I was representing children in the family court. And in some ways, I was very grateful that I didn't have children at that point, because I thought, you know, I would never be able to stand this. Like, you'd see the city come and take away kids from their parents.
Yes,
and it was absolutely heartbreaking.
Right.
But on the other hand, I think I didn't really understand a lot of it. I didn't really get some of the emotions. And that's what I was really trying to get at with Jackie. Like, until she kind of falls in love, which she does, luckily, you know, over the course of the book, she doesn't really understand herself, you know, what is going into these cases and these decisions that she's making about people's lives. And it's, you know, interesting position.
I'd have thought, as well as sort of putting, you know, with the cases, you know, seeing those under the microscope, it's going to put herself and her own feelings and under a similar sort of microscope.
Definitely. And, you know, and the guy she is involved, I don't want to give away too much, but the guy she's involved with has kind of a complicated family situation himself. And, you know, she tries to understand it, but I think, you know, I think she does come to understand it in the end, but, you know, it's not so easy. He has a lot of allegiances. He has an ex-wife, he has a child that he helped to raise. And it's, you know, these are sticky situations.
Very hard, because you're torn between still some responsibility and still some feelings, but new feelings, and that it's a very hard position to be in. I know myself very well.
I think so.
You have this set in New York, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is that from your own experience from that area, or what led you to have that as the location?
Yeah, both of the books are set in New York City. That's where I've always practiced. I used to live in New York City. Now I live with my husband about half an hour north of New York City, but that's definitely kind of the metropolis that I have the most familiarity with. So that's kind of why I set them there.
I was going to say, because I'm in Connecticut, so it's only a little bit more than half an hour north.
Right. I'm not too far from you, I think.
Okay. The whole thing I always wonder about this is, obviously, people who retire from the legal system, they still have a lot of friends or a lot of contacts or associate people they meet and stuff like that, who perhaps are still in that environment or have been in that environment. I always wonder what these people think if they read the book. Did you have anybody like that who sort of?
I did.
You did?
Yeah, I did. I mean, the first book was very much set in the office that I had practiced in as a public defender.
Yeah,
so,
okay, right. That's understandable.
So it was quite amazing, actually. Yeah, and it was amazing hearing people's reactions. I mean, a lot of my former colleagues read the book, and You know, it was great. I mean, I had disguised some people enough that I think nobody was offended by anything, which was good.
Yep.
And, you know, it was nice to hear that they, you know, thought I had represented the type of work we did, you know, in an admirable way without being kind of too souped up about it. I mean, there are people that look at defense work and, you know, they get in their heads that that's God's work and they're doing, and I don't think it is. I think it's definitely good work,
right.
But it's no more God's work than the prosecutor doing God's work.
Exactly. Too many TV shows.
Yeah.
I blame it all on Perry Mason. I mean, it's all his fault.
Yeah, I think so. So, but it was interesting to hear what they thought and,
Yeah,
it was fun.
Yeah, it's always the defense. It's never the prosecutors half the time who get the, you know, who do it. So it makes you wonder sometimes.
Oh no, there's prosecutors who do the writing. You mean, or who?
No,
do
no,
it
on the TV, shows.
Oh, on the TV shows. Yeah. I try not to watch too many of those.
I was going to say, you sit there picking it to pieces.
Yeah, it is.
One interesting thing. Yeah, not just off the cuff on this one. There's only one television show that has gone from being an American television show to having a English TV show created from it. All the others have come the other way, like The Office, and all the others have come from England to have American versions of the program. The only one that's gone the other way is Law and Order. That's the only one that's gone the other way. Yeah,
interesting.
Yes, it is. It is, but it's there's so much difference between the two. But I, you know, it's the only one that they've done that way. Anyway, that's your interesting fact for the day, people.
Oh, yeah, I like it.
Yeah, the fact you've got the three done. I mean, the mid grade one. Did you think you wanted to try that again, a YA or a mid grade or something?
Maybe. You know, I was actually steering clear of the YA because that involved a lot of elements that I didn't really want to deal with. You have to start to get into the sex and the bad language you know, I don't know. It just seemed to me like it was complicated and it's hard to write for YA credibly, I think, when you're an older
person.
I mean, I'm not ancient, but like, when, you know, once you're kind of past 50, like, I think trying to write for that crowd is hard.
Very hard, yes.
So yeah, I don't know if I'll try another middle grade or not. I'm enjoying doing the adult books. So okay.
Are you? I mean, you've had separate characters in each book. Are you sort of thinking perhaps? Yeah, I could make a character that I could get two or three books out of.
No, not so far. Not any of these. I haven't really thought so. Although people said that I should maybe try to look and see if there's like a minor character that could then have their own, spin-off of some sort.
This is what I say all the time. Characters tell you that. You get characters lead you down different paths, and you do get minor characters want more roles, and sometimes they demand their own books. So there you go. It's happening.
It could happen. It could happen still.
Are you working on anything right now?
I am. I'm working on a new book. It has no law in it so far at all, which in some ways has been very kind of liberating. On the other hand, it's made it a little harder because I don't, you know, what am I writing about? But it's more of a mother-daughter story. It's about a younger writer and her more famous mother. She's a little bit in the shadows of her mother, and she's trying to figure out how to get out. But it's been fun. I started it just about when COVID started, which tells you that I'm writing very, very slowly because COVID's been going forever. But so we'll see. We'll see. It's taking me a while, but that's okay. I'm not in any rush.
But it's a different sort of style, you know, sort of style and stuff like that. So it must be interesting as well as different, but you know, there must be sort of some sort of interest to keep that you haven't touched the law side so far.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying kind of more exploring the character's relationship, and that it's not really, there is a love story element, but that's not the thrust of it. It's not, kind of that relationship. It's more a parental relationship, which I'm just finding interesting writing. But sometimes people ask me whether it's really about me and my mother. And I say, no, it's really not about me and my mother. And then I think, is that the question I'm going to be asked, asked every time I go out with that book? That's a little upsetting. So I don't know. We'll see. But I'm still enjoying writing it. So we'll see how it goes.
You did quite a few essays as well. Was that sort of exercises or what, ideas you had?
Yeah, it was kind of how I started a little bit in the memoir class. A lot of those turned into individual essays. And I think that's really where the publishing bug kind of got into me, because the internet is so wide open and there's so many places that you can find to place your pieces if that's what you want to do.
Right.
And I got positive feedback. And once you start getting positive feedback and you realize people are reading what you write, it's hard to go back. So so it was fun. It was fun to get some of the essays out. And I haven't done any in a while. I also did some short stories, which is a good way to kind of get going on the fiction without committing to a full-length novel. So I'd like to do some more of that if I can, get back to it. But there's only so much you can work on at one time. At least me. I don't know.
No, I agree. That's how I started. I used to do short romance stories. In fact, there's a book of them out there called The Bathroom Book of Romance Stories, or Bathroom Book of Romance, because they're sort of like 10, 15 minutes read, and that the bathroom could be the only place you get 10, 15 minutes of peace and quiet.
Can I just tell you, we have a whole bookshelf in our bathroom.
There you go.
Just for bathroom books. Now I will definitely get yours, but sorts of books in the bathroom.
I used to do them online about every 2-3 months or stuff like that. And I got, I wrote them for several years, about 5, 6, 7 years, especially one at Christmas and stuff like that. And I was just sort of trying to get them together to put into a book. And a lady contacted me from Toronto, who I regularly sent the stories to when I wrote one and stuff like that. And she said, you've done it to me again. And I thought, what the heck's come on? I've done now. And she said, I got to work today. She said, my makeup was running down my face. My eyes are red. She says, you got to let us know when one of your romance stories is a weepy one, because I wasn't prepared for it. So when I came to do the book, beside every title that was of a weepy one, I put a little box of Kleenex tissues right next to the title, so that people would know. But it was great, and I think that's great how you can write that, because it in the short stuff, because it helps you when you get to finally write the bigger books, you're writing like for a page story, a page turner. And in fact, when I did write my books, I wrote them like that. I wrote them, in the days when you used to get a lunch hour. These days it's a lunch if you're lucky. And I used to sit at work for that hour, with a sandwich or something like that, and write a chapter. So it was like, it always reminds me of the old Saturday cinema serials, leave the heroine dangling from the cliff, come next week sort of thing. And I do think it helps you, in a way, write that sort of thing.
I think so.
When you finally had your first book there in your hand, did you realize that that's when the work actually just starts? That how much there is?
For sure. For sure. There's so much work with the promotion. And, the first book, actually, I felt like it went pretty well. The second two books both came out during COVID, and it just has been so difficult. And especially the middle grade was especially difficult, because I really needed to get into the schools and to get into libraries, and everything was closed. You couldn't get anywhere near it. So since then, I've been to maybe like 5 or 6 schools, but it's very difficult. So, I'm hopeful that things will get better in the fall. But it's
I think things have started. I know a lot more people have done a lot more reading, I think, in the COVID period as well.
Right, I think so.
The books seem to be a little, taking off a bit more, talking to people on the show and that. Anyway, time is going through. So what I'm going to do now, Raina, is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find out more about you and, of course, about your books.
Terrific. Thank you. So if you want to find out more about me, I have a website. It's I don't know how you're going to get this, but it's RainaMartyrGenton.com. It's just, I would spell it all out for you, but
I'll do that in a minute. Okay.
yes. Okay. Oh, okay. Good. And the books are available on Amazon or through, you know, any indie bookstore that, you know, support your indie bookstores. If you go in and order the book, they will get you any of these books.
Okay. Well, Raina, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today. Perhaps when you get this final one, the next one done, you come back and chat to us again.
Thanks so much. I would love that.
Okay. Thank you. Well, there you go. My guest today. And as she says, you put these names together and you get a web page. It's Raina, R-E-Y-N-A, Marder, M-A-R-D-E-R, and Genten, which is G-E-N-T-I-N. So R-E-Y-N-A-M-A-R-D-E-R-G-E-N-T-I-N.com. And you find lots of stuff about reviews, about her books, discussions, all sorts of things on there, including you know, her short ones and everything like that, short stories and everything like that. Well, that's it. I'll be back tomorrow with a fresh guest. But until then, as always, I have one thing left to say. Don't forget...